Oh, Brian, I'm full.
I'm happily full.
Oh, really?
I'm at that nice percentage of fullness where I'm not hating myself, but I'm satisfied. But I could also, like, I don't know, the food you just cooked for me was so delicious that my taste buds are still yearning for more.
So you don't have that, like, fried chicken depression that we talked about last season of EDD, where, like, it's the greatest thing ever, and then you start crashing and questioning life and mistakes you've made.
We could create a whole diagnostic manual of mental health issues all based on food.
Yeah, exactly. I reckon there's study. I'm happy to be the guinea pig here, where we feed me large amounts of KFC and just see my decline.
Coffee anxiety. I don't know what kind of, poultry psychosis.
Yeah. And so I've been away for a while. It's probably our many fans are probably wondering, where the hell have you guys been?
Yeah, well, I've not been going anywhere. But you've been away.
Yeah, I've been away for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. That's how long it's been since we've done EDD. But I've just been pretty much traveling around, mainly Europe, a few Asia stops in there.
Yep.
Just eating, drinking. There were plans to work, but that didn't quite happen. Food got in the way.
That's right. And I feel like that when a friend of yours has gone away for a while, it's kind of cliche to say, oh, what'd you get up to? What was the highlights and the lights? The easiest way is just to say, what was the best thing you ate? Oh. What was the worst thing you ate? What was the most surprising thing you ate? So those questions apply here.
Oh, God, that's tough. Like,
okay, what's the worst thing you ate?
Worst. Oh, I got food poisoning.
Oh, where did you get food poisoning?
Yeah, and this is a big controversial topic because I'm already going to offend people. We're just starting up recording again. But
that's,
I think the French food's overrated. French food is like the definition of high dining. And this may be like, I'm in a few glasses of Georgian wine in, so I'm just speaking some truths. Wake up, sheeple. But no, I love French food, but
yep.
I do think there are so many other cuisines that do such incredible things, and French food just has that high dining reputation. I think we'll be talking about this on another episode about this idea of fine dining. And I'm a bit sometimes overly critical of French food, I think because it has that reputation of being the world's best often. But it was pretty funny because we finally went out for like a nice French meal. And what did I even eat? I think it was like a salmon. I think it was chicken, but then it had like mussels or something on it.
Okay.
But we were in Paris. There's no ocean near Paris.
Of course.
Now I really think about it, it was my mistake. That was probably the worst. It tasted good at the time.
Okay.
But it knocked. I missed the rest of Paris because I was sick for a week. But no, mainly food was good.
Where was it? Who was the surprising? Or who was the surprise food?
In the World Cup of Food?
In the Tim's UEFA World Cup of Food.
Thailand was a stopover. Obviously, Thai food's really famous, but Thai food, like, I didn't realize just how amazing it was. Obviously, we'll get to that another day because that's a whole episode in itself, that trip to Thailand. But Georgia, absolutely. Like, I'd heard rumors about Georgian food and I didn't know that much about it.
Right.
But if you don't know, like, Georgia's the small nation. No, most people don't know where Georgia is, I think, but a small nation that's kind of squished in between Turkey, Russia, and Western Europe. But the food there was, I'm going to throw it out there, the best I ate in the last 6 months.
Wow.
So yeah, it is just mind-blowingly good, unique, and great fresh ingredients. So yeah, that's definitely the surprise winner. And I think you've been kind because I gave you a heads up that Georgian food is blowing my mind at the moment. And you found this delicious glass of Georgian wine. What's it called?
It's called... Grab the bottle, Tim.
All right, grab it.
So it's called Pheasant's Tears. When I bought it, I thought it was Peasant's Tears, which is a little bit sadder. But, you know, the pheasant might be having some fried chicken depression too. And
yeah,
he's crying. So I first came across Georgian wine when I ate at Polly, which is a kind of a wine bar restaurant in Surry Hills, and they served up a really amazing Georgian wine. I forget what it was, but it was really funky and had a beautiful flavor profile and really interesting flavor notes. Like, I'm not a big wine guy, so when I go to a restaurant with a good wine list, I say to the sommelier or whoever, like, give me the weirdest, most interesting wine you have, and that's what they gave me, and that really intrigued me. So I guess when you told me about Georgia being your favorite cuisine or surprise eat, then yeah, immediately I got ourselves a bottle of pheasant's teas. And so, yeah.
But if you like, I just cooked some Georgian food for you. But if you'd never eaten it before,
yep.
Thinking about, you know, Georgia, what do you think the food? What would you have predicted the food would have been?
All I can think of is like that Ray Charles song. It's like, what does Ray Charles eat?
He's talking about Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, see, that's...
Okay, well, maybe that's, he wasn't.
Yeah, maybe not.
He's like, Georgia on my mind.
So misunderstood all these years.
He was
years.
Just thinking, the whole time he's like, man, people are like this creative, you know, like they think it's about civil rights, but he's like, I was thinking about Georgian dumplings.
Like. So, yeah, to answer your question, I had no real idea. I guess geographically, it seems like it would draw influence from its neighbors. But yeah, I had no real preconceptions.
So. I guess I think a lot of people link Georgia with Russia.
Okay.
A little bit. And, you know, they're two countries that have had a lot of conflict in the past.
Right.
But I think a lot of people kind of think they're the same. So I don't know, maybe I even had pro stereotypes of Georgia at once as being like a goulash sort of, you know, that sort of the place. But it's not... It's okay. Definitely not. Like, they have such fascinating food that is just so diverse. And I think it is because it was on the... Obviously, its neighbors have such... Like, Turkey has such interesting food. And, you know, even the Russian influence, you get... That's some interesting flavors as well.
Mm.
But the main part of it was it's located on, like, what was the Silk Road.
Mm.
So you had masses of spices and ingredients coming through from the Middle East and Asia and, you know, China.
Mm.
And you can see that in dishes like there's khinkali, which is pretty much a ginormous dumpling.
Okay.
Like, we're talking like size of your hand dumpling.
Okay.
And I think you looked this up, like you found for me, because this was a dilemma that that we had while eating in Georgia. We had these dumplings, which was like, how do you eat them? Because, you know, like a Chinese dumpling, you can pick up with chopsticks or...
Sure.
But these are like, your chopsticks would snap in half if you tried. So, but like, so this is what King Kali says. What do you do? It says, oh yeah, you've written it here. Make a claw with your fingers and grab onto the dumpling from its top knot. Ooh, hipster. We could hipster dumplings.
Yeah.
Then biting a small hole into the side, tilt your head back to slurp out the broth before sinking your teeth into the filling.
Mm.
Discard the top knot.
Oh, yeah.
That's some advice for Cindy's Brewsters. take a swig or two of beer, sigh with pleasure, and repeat. Where was that from?
I don't know.
Wiki?
Probably Wiki, yeah.
It's beautiful writing.
That's fantastic. And I love that the lore or the narrative when it comes to the eating of food. I mean, obviously, that kind of has parallels with the Xiaolongbao, the Chinese soup dumpling. Although one of my food heroes, Eddie Wong, who has a couple of shows on SBS and Viceland, he is not a fan of penetrating the dumpling skin at all.
Ooh!
Because if you go to Din Tai Fung, they generally advocate this type of method.
To bite the top off, or even sometimes to let the steam out.
Yeah. So Eddie Wong says that that's hooliganism. You want to give the dumpling a bath in the cool vinegar or like whatever dipping sauce, so it cools down, and then you put the whole thing in your mouth once it's come to the appropriate temperature.
Is this so you don't lose any of the flavor or the...
And it's just, you know, maybe it's a non-penetrative method.
Just man up.
But, well, it's manning up in a different way. You're wanting the entire dumpling in your mouth, and you want that explosion of flavor in your mouth. And that's a wonderful thing.
But yeah, so, and what are your thoughts on what else I just cooked? So what do we have? We had
you're gonna have to tell us, because I don't know the pronunciations.
So there's Khachapuri, and the one that the variety of Khachapuri we just ate is, I always forget this. I think it's Ajarian or Ajirouli Khachapuri. Isn't that fun to say? Ajirouli Khachapuri. So, but yeah, that's, this is, how would you describe it? If you just, saw it, I put in the work. What does it look like?
So it looks like a pide. Is that how you sound, spell it, pronounce it? So it's got that kind of torpedo shape, kind of like a Turkish bread or kind of a pizza-y consistency.
Yeah.
And then you've got a kind of a cheesy, eggy mixture. I think you use feta and mozzarella, but in Georgia it's
feta, mozzarella and ricotta. But yeah, they have their, Georgia has a lot of their own cheeses and, you know, so it's, this is just like a poor man's imitation, but it turned out all right.
It was
bloody
delicious.
It's kind of boat, I guess you'd describe it as being boat shaped. As well. It looks like if you think of a boat and you fill that boat with cheese and egg, like that's a, that's my sort of boat.
Yes. And it's crowned with an egg yolk, which you, you kind of, you rip one of the ends off and then you swish the egg yolk.
It's kind of like bim bim bap style. Like you're mixing that egg in while everything's still hot to keep it cooking. And this is, I think we've talked before about, like, you know, obviously I go on about Korean food and how fun it is because it's like a bit of a social, you know, you often do, it's designed to almost eat with friends. And I think this is another one of these dishes that is great for that because you're both kind of tearing off bits of the bread. I described it almost like a cob, like the classic cob loaf and with spinach dip.
Yeah.
But yeah, you kind of like, as we ate it, you know, we just, we're tearing it apart, dipping it in, chatting, drinking pheasant's tears, and I think that was a pretty that turned out incredibly well for that second time I've ever cooked that.
It was phenomenal, and it paired particularly well with this other eggplant dish that you cooked. So it was fried eggplant, and then inside you had like a walnut puree, I guess.
In Georgia, there's just like a lot of walnut. They use whatever, obviously. It's not like the wealthiest nation in the world, so you use what ingredients you've got. They've been blessed with large amounts of walnuts and large amounts of pomegranate as well, which features in a lot of their dishes. But yeah, it's like a walnut puree. So I think it was walnut, garlic, coriander, fenugreek, olive oil.
So good.
It just like, and walnuts, when you blend them, it just blows my mind. It, like, they become super creamy. Amazing.
Well, I guess it's not dissimilar to the kind of cashew cream or nut cream phase we seem to be in, which is super delicious. It gave me like a Uyghur northwestern Chinese vibe because at places like Chinese Noodle Restaurant in the city, they, I guess they have that fried eggplant dish. And the spice profile really kind of brought my memory of that back. So yeah
which I think is delicious. A lot of Uyghur use a lot of cumin, but maybe that fenugreek and coriander, when that comes together, maybe that creates that similar sort of vibe or something. It's but I guess also a lot of these foods might have been influenced by China. We always have to remember that because it was on the Silk Road, so a lot of those flavor profiles might have traveled through Georgia at some point, and then that's how they've ended up with some of those flavors, I reckon.
Yeah, and that is consistent with the third dish you cooked, which is just a really lovely tomato and cucumber salad with walnuts again, and again, a similar kind of pureed walnut sauce, which isn't dissimilar to kind of the tahini or sesame seed-based sauces you'd get at a Uyghur restaurant. But then it feels like maybe like not dissimilar to a Greek salad from Europe. So,
and I was having this, like, because I've tried to make this here, but I think I said while we're eating it, like, the dressing was nice, the cucumbers were nice, but something that we're really let down with in Australia is our quality of tomatoes. And I didn't realize that until eating in, like, Georgia's produce. I don't know what's going on with their soil or something, but the best tomatoes I've ever eaten, better than, like, Sicily, which, you know, better than parts of Italy, which are famous for tomatoes. And it's just incredible, like the flavor. Like I don't think I ever realized how much flavor tomatoes can have. Like sometimes I viewed tomatoes here as like a filler, like you just chuck a slice on a sandwich, or you know, you add things to it, like a tomato pasta sauce. But they're just like the tomato by itself, and I think that's why this dish is everywhere in Georgia, like this tomato salad, because the tomatoes are a star on their own. So you liked it though.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Yeah, I think that eggplant dish is definitely something that I'll be getting the recipe off. And yeah, it's phenomenal flavors, and yeah, it's a really amazing moment when you taste something that is delicious and has maybe some reference points that are familiar, but there is that moment of kind of amazing surprise and novelty, and that kind of wow factor, which is really wonderful.
Yeah, because I guess we're in Sydney, which is we do have a very diverse variety of food options here. Mm. But yeah, when you have that moment where you eat a new cuisine and you go, oh, like that's something completely fresh and new. So yeah, it is always same thing when I went to Georgia, and it was the first time I'd tried most of these foods, like, and getting like to go to some of these incredible restaurants doing it. And yeah, a lot of emotional moments because it's new flavors. That's how often you get to experience a brand new flavor.
Mm. So. Yeah. And when I thought about talking about Georgian food and I guess the new delights you've had with them, it got me thinking about, this restaurant, well, in the Momofuku Empire. You know, we talk about Momofuku a lot on this podcast. But their restaurant in Sydney is called Seobo. And it started out as, I guess a more modern Australian, European influence restaurant with its opening chef, Ben Greeno. But it after a couple of years, it got handed over to a chef called Paul Carmichael. And he's from the Caribbean.
Okay.
That kind of ushered in a whole new era for the restaurant. And now it's essentially a Caribbean restaurant. Obviously with a fine dining pedigree and with a level of ingredients and process which comes from, you know, years of experience and fine dining. But the times I've eaten there, I've had a similar experience. The way that the flavors combine together and the way that it's cooked is really mind-blowing. Like I had a charcoal-grilled fish head with chickpea and hot sauce, which was just so insanely delicious. Heaps of lime and different spices. And it's just, again, that really phenomenal moment where you've never tasted anything like this. And it's really, really exciting.
But I it's funny because you talk about this, like, yeah, Caribbean food. That's not something until Momofuku, I guess, has picked it up.
Mm.
That might completely change the landscape for that cuisine in Australia, at least. You know, like, or I was just thinking, will the same thing happen with Georgian food? Like, all it takes is for one chef to come to my house and eat my eggplant rolls and go, Tim, I'll give you $1 million. But like, no, I was just thinking, and to be honest, where I think it all comes together in terms of like why Georgian food could explode and should explode is the wine as well.
Yes.
Like you've got this wine here, which is so fucking delicious. Like, it's incredible.
Mm.
And I'm really sorry to many nations around the world who claim that they are the birthplace of wine. But Georgia is currently where scientists believe wine was invented.
Oh,
so
really?
You have like a mass history of really unique wines. They've got, I think, like thousands of varieties of grapes. And when I was there, it's like, you just look at like everywhere you walk, like you just walk down streets and everyone outside their windows just growing their own grapes and making their wine. And it must just be the right temperature or something, because there's something going on there that wine just works. And yeah, so I think, in terms of, because I can hear the phones going off here, the complaints are coming in. But yeah, I think it's like, in terms of the history of the wine, I wrote it down here just because we just need to do some fact checking. But so Georgians claim that wine was invented in Georgia, and it seems that the claim could be true because the source isn't even Wikipedia, Brian.
Well, that's That's pretty good.
So it's the study published by the University of the Pennsylvania Museum of Archaeology. That sounds pretty legit. Or it could be like...
a really good fake.
like an Aldi wine show. You know, like you buy a bottle of Aldi wine, it's like...
gold medal.
The gold medal at the China Wines. And you're like, okay, I'll take three. But researchers found wine residue on pottery shards from two archaeological sites in Georgia dating back to 6,000 BC.
Hectic.
That's a long time ago. And the findings are the earliest evidence so far of wine made from the Eurasian grape, which is the kind of grapes that we're used to in terms of like modern day wines. I think the earliest examples of like wine, I think go back to China, but it's more like a rice wine variety.
Right.
But the grapes that we're... When you think of wine now, I think the earliest traces of them go back to Georgia. So you can hang up your phones now. I've proved you wrong, according to the University of Pennsylvania Museum of Archaeology.
And it's super delicious. I mean, I guess it's broadly categorized as an orange wine or a skin contact natural wine. But I guess for people that haven't drunk it, I guess it's... it's orange in color, and it's got, I guess, that tanniny flavor, which comes from, I guess, putting the entire grape and letting the fermentation process happen, in the barrel or in the vase. Is it like a vase that they use?
I think they do, these big kind of clay pots almost. Yep. Yeah.
But it's got a beautiful length and, a slight funk in flavor, but... I feel like, I don't know, to me, it like, speaking to what you were saying before about tomatoes, this to me tastes like what wine should taste like.
Yeah.
Like, I think about other wines, white wines I've drunk, and it feels like it's missing something after you drink a wine like this. This wine tastes like it has all the elements.
Well, I think I said to you when you first poured me a glass of this, and it kind of took me back to Georgia.
Mm.
I said that, like, I don't know, I've come back to Australia and I've just been drinking a lot of beer.
Mm.
And then I have a glass of this, have a sip of this, and I'm like, if this was readily available and cheap, I'd be drinking this non-stop. Like, and in Georgia, I didn't even think about I didn't even crave a beer because, and that doesn't happen here. I don't know what it is. There's just, I know that it's out there. I know there's great wine around, but maybe it's the accessibility. It was like, you could go anywhere there and the price was right as well. Like, you could get a great quality glass of wine.
Mm.
But like you're saying, this style, which is, you know, I think it's most similar to these kind of orange wines and amber wines that are starting to become more popular in Australia now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does, at least for my palate and clearly yours as well. Yeah. Like, it's got something to it that this could, like, I would drink this over a beer, like, most of the time, I think. So,
yeah, it has, as I said, it has all those elements on the palate. It's got a good amount of sweetness and acid, but also that kind of funk, for want of a better term. And yeah, it's easy to drink, and I think it would pair well with lots of things. So, in that sense, it's a fine wine to me.
So, can we? I was looking the other day. I don't think you can go out and get Georgian food very easily in Sydney, at least. I don't, or in Australia.
I think there was a little pop-up in Summer Hill or something. Just reading now. So, yeah, there was a social enterprise called the Magic Tablecloth.
Okay.
Which was, an organization to try and provide... Eastern European food for people that are wanting to expand their palate or explore new things. And they've hooked up with another NGO or another organization called Four Brave Women, looking at empowering refugees to manage their own business and kind of get set up. So there doesn't seem to be anything permanent, I guess.
So should I do it? I was saying before, like, I often think about opening up a cafe or a restaurant.
Mm.
I probably would never do it because the lifestyle seems quite horrible, really.
Yeah, it's true.
But I feel like I just don't know if I can open up a Georgian restaurant. I think there's like, if you're someone from the Georgian community in Australia needs to do this, because I think if it's me who does it, and they're just, I'm like, they're like, what's your story? And I'm like, oh, I traveled to Georgia for 2 weeks and then I opened up a restaurant. Like, yeah, it's not going to fly.
I think, yeah, I think if you get a Georgian grandmother to adopt you,
mm.
then that's probably the way to go. And okay. It's a nice narrative.
So if you're listening, Georgian grandmothers,
yeah,
please get in touch with us on our Instagram, EDDEAT podcast,
mm.
Facebook, EDDEAT.
I'm sure there's a Georgian grandmother's Facebook group that yeah. we can try and track down.
Oh, but I'm glad you enjoyed the food.
It was so good, man. Amazing.
Yeah, just like look up, it, maybe a cool thing for you, because it's not easy to find Georgian food, but maybe look up some recipes.
Okay.
Khachapuri, look, King Kali, the dumplings, mm. tomato salad. The walnut, Aldi is now selling walnuts much cheaper, Brian. So walnut dressing is becoming a reality in my life. So, but yeah, if you're listening and you're intrigued by it, look up some pictures. We'll put some up on the EDDEAT Instagram and
yep.
Try and cook it. And we don't really have pomegranates at the moment, which made it hard. But your great Brian came up with chucking some red grapes in, and that
they're probably about a month old. They've been my CRISPR for
aged. It was pretty much mine.
Yeah, great.
Now, Brian, I'm gonna hand you your pheasant's tears.
Thank you.
Because I've finished them. I was gonna drink it myself, but
okay. Thank
but
you.
Yeah, so this is lovely to be back recording.
Hmm.
And I guess I think next week we'll talk about. I think I really want to talk about this high dining versus cheap food, and because you know a lot of this food I ate in Georgia wasn't exactly fine dining, but I was saying to you as well, probably as like getting a bit passionate while I was eating, which I often do. I was like, you know, this it doesn't need to be fine. You know, this doesn't. These are often just like street side stalls, but I was saying like someone at Key would sometimes beg to be able to make food this good. So we'll talk about that next week. Yep. I reckon, if that's all right.
It's a date.
All right, we'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.